You shall do the same. You wish, right? Okay, page 336, Pasuk Ches. Okay, yesterday we learned the Pesukim, and we started to learn the Mitzudos David. Let's review what we learned yesterday before we go full force. Nishba Hashem Elokim b'nafshay ne'um Hashem Elokei tzedakos nisoev anochi eskoin Yaakov. But the Arminois of sonesi v'hiskariti ir umloya. Hashem, who swears? All of these shemos referring to Hashem. Hashem Elokim b'nafshay. Hashem's neshama, powerful expression. Ne'um Hashem, the words of Hashem. Elokei tzedakos, the God of the hosts. Everything that's out there in the universe. Next word, Nisoev Anochi Eskon Yaakov. According to the Mitzvot, this means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a love, a very, very deep love. To'ev is a desire for what? The Ge'oin Yaakov. Ge'oin Yaakov Asher Ohev Selah. A desire. A taiva. A desire. Yesterday I told you it means to detest. But then we learned, so that's what it says in the Judaic Press? How does it translate the word in the Judaic Press?
Abhor,
to hate, to detest. That's how I translated it yesterday when I started. What does the Targum say? Curious Targum says, "Minabel ano yos makasha." Minabel means what to hate.
Yeah, like
Nibel, to disgust it. Okay, that's what it says in the Targum. But the Mitzudos David does not want to give such a nasty interpretation, and he says it means to love, a love. Look at the Mitzudos David.
Mitoev
be'emes ani oyev es ge'on Yaakov. Okay, so yeah, the word to'ev means a desire for good, and the Targum says it means just the other lashon of we have a problem in the Radak lashon of hatred. So you have one word which, depending on the context, can mean either to love or to hate.
I don't see how he says that since it's not spelled the same.
How do you spell the word?
The vav
can be with a vav. Good point. I didn't realize that. Good point. But nevertheless, you know, noyach mit zibben greiben. No, spelling and diktuk. No, that never stopped us.
A vav
and a base are in certain instances can indeed be interchanged.
Okay.
In any event, you're right. In Echadam, that's why we're learning. That's what we're learning over here. The koyach of you know the Hebrew language is very, very powerful stuff. But over here we have over here according to the Mitzvah, the Stavrik of the Shmurchul, it's a very powerful pasuk over here. Hashem, there we mentioned yesterday, I think 7-8 names. Hashem is swearing, Adnos Yudke Vavke, which in this context means Elokim. Then it says Benavshoy. Then it says Nu'um, the words of Hashem. It says Elokei Tzevokois. That's a whole new Shem Hashem. Mitoev, according to the Mitzvot of Hashem, Hashem has a love. Onoichi. Onoichi is a very powerful word for Hashem's name because Hashem gave the Torah with the word Onoichi, Hashem Elokecha. Go'in Yaakov means the pride. The pride of Yaakov, which means the beauty of Yaakov. The Armin Oysav, you know, the word Goin is a very funny word. Today everyone is Harav HaGoin. Inflation. Go to a wedding, everyone became today Harav HaGoin.
Even the bride.
Even the bride is the Goin? Yeah? You're joking, right? So, you know, Rabbi Rakef, he always likes to say, Al Tikri Goin Elagun. Harav HaGoin, Harav HaGoon. Rav Ruderman, he once went to a wedding, and they called up Harav HaGoin. So he said to someone, I thought we've already passed the Tekufa of the Goinim. The Goinim came after the Amorayim, the Rabbanim Savaroi, and then came the Goinim, and then came the Rishonim, the Achroinim, and today, what are we today? I don't know. What are we today? But he made a joke. What, all these Goinim here by this wedding? I thought that we've already, the Tekufa of the Goinim, Rav Hai Goin, Rav Sadi Goin, this was 1,000 years ago. All of a sudden, today everyone's a goyin. What happened? Okay, you have to know all the nuances. There's a goyin, hagoyin, hagodol. You know that? You know all these nuances. I learned all these nuances. There's a goyin, hagodol. Then you call some harav hagoyin. Then what's the next word? Harav hagoyin, a resh with a strechel. Harav hagoyin, reb, so and so. But if you're the real deal, you called hagoyin, Hagadol Rebbe. Someone's in a higher madrega, you don't just have a reish, so you have Hagoin Reish Beis Yud. It's amazing all the different nuances to distinguish between different madregos of Hashivas.
You just get to go to higher class events.
In Shemayim, they have a whole different set of titles. Okay, Shemayim, all this stuff is total nonsense. We all know that. Esgoin Yaakov, the Goin of Yaakov, the pride of Yaakov, the Aaron Isav. Why is it called the Goin? The Goin is the Gematria. What is going to be Gematria? Nun is 50, right? 50. And Gimel is 3. And Vav is 6. Aleph is 1 for a total of 60. So who gets the title Goin? Someone who knows Shas. How many Mesechtois are there in Shas? Our tradition is 60. And if you'll count, come up with 60. The whole day talking about this. 63, 62, 64. We break down Mesechta, Nezakin into 3. Break down Bava Kama, Bava Mitzvah, Bava Basra. We haven't broken that into 3, but really it's 1. Why is it 1? Because it used to be called Mesechta Nezakin. It's just that the printers cannot publish it in one pay and one volume, so they broke it up into 3 different Mesechtas. What about Avos? Is that part? You have a lot of Torah, but in any event, Goin is Begematria 60, and that is traditionally the one who got the title Goin was a person who was an expert in all 60 Mesechtos. Who today is a Baki Muflug in all 60 Mesechtos of Shas that truly deserves the title of Goin?
That
19-year-old kid. Oh, maybe in Echanami, Halavai. He knows the Bible, but he had in the news, a 19-year-old boy, he knows the whole Shas by heart. They tested, they have a video of them being tested. Fantastic. Baruch
and
Hashem. What? I'm a Farshim. Ach Shrei Dore. What?
From the Yeshiva Bian.
The Bian Rebbe. Wow. Ooh. Okay, the Bian Rebbe is a modern guy. He's the guy from Flatbush. You know that. The Bian Rebbe used to live in Flatbush. He's a real American. He's a real Yankee Doodle. I even went to visit him. I talked to him like he's a young guy. He's not older than 50.
No, he's in the 60s already.
Yeah?
I'm telling you,
yeah.
Considered a young guy.
I spoke to a friend
of his. Okay.
Who is that?
I talked to him when I went into his. I went there. Someone I know is Mishpacha with the Bian Rebbe.
What's his name? Rabinowitz, right?
Brian.
I know someone who's Mishpacha with the Bian Rebbe. He's a real American. And he told me, when I go to Israel, I have to go visit him. So I went to visit him. I come there, and the Gabbai says to me, do you have an appointment? I said, no. So then I'm sorry you can't see the Rebbe. I said, come on, I'm coming to bring regards from, I said the name of the person who told me I must go. So, oh, you're coming from him? Okay, get online. Okay, so I get online. And then I'm waiting in line. It should only be more than 5 minutes till my turn to come. Every single second, another guy walks in, and the gabbai says to me, let him go first. He has a flight to catch. Let him go first. Because this guy in a zokin, and there was an elderly man who comes in. So, of course, you know, all right, I had to wait an hour. But finally, when I go into him, I talk to him like I talk to you. I end up feeling, you know, like, what? No, maybe it is good. Like, he's a regular nice guy. And he said, and then he was so nice to me, and he says to me, he asked me, I don't want to tell you all the personal things he said to me, but he said to me things that no one else said to me. Like, really nice, simple things. And I was like, wow, this guy's a normal person. He's a nice, chashu, you know, simple person, normal person. He's the one who gets the chazaka, beyond the chazaka, to the first one to light the hadlaka at Lag Ba'omer. Beyond the chazaka. They have now 500,000 people come to Meron on Lag Ba'Omer. 500,000 people, that's serious business. The whole country is mobilized. The whole army and the police, every helicopter they have, you know, the whole country is mobilized for Lag Ba'Omer. And who has the chazaka to be the first one to light the hadlaka? They have like 50 hadlakas. They light the hadlakas every half an hour. There's another hadlaka. Who gets the first one? The Bian Rebbe. And they show in the video who's lying, he's lying, oh, I know that guy. I know him, he's a nice person. As Geoin, Yaakov, the Armin Oisav, Sonesi Hashem says, I hate the palaces. The palace referred to what? The Bati Midrash, Bati Midrash, which they do, the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, which they are worshipping idols, or the Hisgarti Ir, Umloy Hashem says, I'm going to deliver in the hands of the enemy the city Umloy and its fullness. And we learned yesterday, maybe we're not going to review, we did this for yesterday, the Mesutavi is an incredible Chiddush, and this Pasik, Hisgarti Ir Umloya, comes after what we learned on the top of the page. On the top of the page, Pasuk Zayin, it says, L'chein ato yiglu b'roish goylim. You're going to go into Golas. And then it says, Hashem is going to destroy the city. So we discussed yesterday at length. Not at length, we discussed yesterday that there are two different elements to Chorban. There is the Chorban of Yerushalayim, and there is the Chorban of the Beis HaMikdash. Which is the Ikar, and which is the Tofel? So there are different Memori Chazal that give you different indications, which one is which. In this pasuk, and the Mitzudos David expressed this outright, it appears, the Ikor Chorban was the Chorban of Yerushalayim, that we were exiled from the land, from Tzion. Once we were exiled from Eretz Yisrael, so Hashem says, so what do I need to base on Migdash? You know what? Let's shut it down. But other Mamari Chazal, many other, probably the majority, indicate that it's just the opposite. The Ikur Chorbin was not the Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. As far as Hashem was concerned, plan A was there would be a Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar would destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but the Jewish people would be permitted to live there, to remain living in Eretz Yisrael. Why did it have to be that not only was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed, but they also went into exile? That was secondary. The Ikar was the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. So every time you learn about Chorban, it comes Tisha B'Av, and you learn about Shavuos Matamuz and Tisha B'Av, you have to take note, there are two separate Chorbanos. There is the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, and there is the Chorban, the Golos, from Eretz Yisrael. And what makes that, when you appreciate the two dimensions of Chorban, when you look at today it's a whole new world today, because today, anyone who wants to return to Eretz Yisrael, it's in your power to do so. For almost 2,000 years, you couldn't go. You could not, the government would not let you leave the country, or if they let you leave the country, the country, Eretz Yisrael, was under the control of foreign occupiers, and they would not let you enter. And even if they did let you enter, what would you do there? What kind of parnasa, what kind of life would you have in Eretz Yisrael? And today, you know, no one's stopping you. No one is stopping any of us from living a good life in Eretz Yisrael and enjoying the ruchnius that is there in the land. So when you look at the Chorban, basically the Chorban, you always have to break it down into these two elements: the Chorban Beis HaMikdash and the Golos from Eretz Yisrael. Here, the Mitzudos David clearly breaks the two up. Pasuk Zayin is Ato Yiglu Beroish Koylim, and Pasuk Ches discusses the Armin Oisav Sonesi. The Zgarti Ir Ubeloya, and the Mitzudos, we learned this yesterday in the Mitzudos David, how she writes over here, the last line on page 337, Im ki ahuvali ki hoyal. Look at these words. You can't deny these words of the Mitzudos, these last words on the page. The very last words, hoyal, the secheraf hoir ma li beveis hamikdash. The Iker Chorban was the land. Once the land was destroyed, what do I need a Beis HaMikdash for? That's a very big Chiddush. Again, that's not the common understanding. The common understanding is the Hashem destroyed the Iker Chorban was the Beis HaMikdash. And once we had no Beis HaMikdash, it was secondary that we were exiled from the land. And as we mentioned yesterday on Tisha B'Av, we recite kinois. The kinois are divided into two parts. There's the first chunk of kinois, and then at the end there are nine tzioins. The first chunk of kinois, almost every single kina mentions the Beis HaMikdash. It mentions the Golos Hashchina, the Kohanim who served in the Beis HaMikdash, the various kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, how Titus destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Come on, go through every single kina. You will find either explicitly a mention of the Beis HaMikdash or those who serve in the Beis HaMikdash, or it will discuss the Shechina, it will discuss something which is not explicit, but very, very close, alluding to the Beis HaMikdash or the Mokom HaShu'as HaShechina. And then when you come to the 9 Tzioins, at the end of Kinois, there is no mention of the Beis HaMikdash. It is purely the Shevach of the land, of Eretz Yisrael. Why are the Kinois divided into these two parts? Because there are two separate elements to Churban, the Beis HaMikdash and Eretz Yisrael. And notice the order. The order of Kinois is first the Beis HaMikdash and then the land. And here, the order in Amos is reversed. First the Golus, and then the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, next pasuk. This is where we're up to yesterday. That was a good review from yesterday. V'haya im yivashu asar anashim b'bayisach v'vameis. We learned yesterday that if 10 people are going to be found in the house, they will die. There will be 10 survivors. All 10 will die. Pasuk yud. We did this yesterday. We just read the pasuk. We read it again. V'unisao dodo umisarfo. Now, dodo, we'll learn one parish at this moment. The dodo is the brother of the father. Umisarfoi, a very unusual word, the brother of the mother. There are two types of uncles. Uncle from the mother, uncle from the father. Okay, so the dodo will carry the person, the body, the bones away. Umisarfoi. And also the brother of the mother will carry these bones away. Why uncles? Why do we have to have the uncles carrying the bones of the dead people? Why not the children? Why not the cousins? Why not a stranger? What's this about an uncle? What in the world over here are we dealing with the uncle? Okay, let's hold off for one moment. You have to notice that the word uncle is a very powerful idea, because who married uncles? Who married Aaron married his Wait, who married the uncle? Mordechai married his niece. Okay, married his niece. And Aaron married, Vayikach Aaron, Elisheva, Bas, no relation. So who's the one that married Dodo? So Vayikach, which one?
Amram married his aunt.
Right, Amram. Isn't there something to be said about that? That First of all, an aunt is one of the arayos. It is a very bizarre concept, because Chazal tell us it is a mitzvah. It is a mitzvah to marry your niece. Not only is it not an erva to marry your niece. It is a mitzvah. If you want to do a shidduch, the best person to marry is your niece. Yet the same relationship in reverse is arayos. For a man to marry his aunt, his... There is no Yibam. Yibam is a sister-in-law. A sister-in-law, under normal circumstances, is an erva. So you say, Mr. Mills is saying, good, before Matan Torah, before the Ramban says, before Matan Torah, Yibam was fulfilled by any relative. And that's why there was a complaint against Yehuda, was permitted to marry Tamar. There's a whole question of v'lo yada'ah. Does it mean that he remained married to Tamar, or does it mean that he distanced himself from Tamar? But in the time of Matan Torah, Yibum can be performed by any relative, even a father-in-law.
You see, Rus with Boyaz.
Rus and Boyaz, they were not. They were not related.
No,
it was the Goyal.
Related. But back then, you were still able.
No, that was after Matan Torah.
That had nothing to do with Yibam. That's right. All this farm that Rus and Boaz was not Yibam in any way, shape, or form.
That was a guy.
He bought the field, and since she was part of the property, you know, that's why he bought the field first.
Right. That was another man.
Ploni Almoini. But even Ploni Almoni was not the Yavam. He was not the Yavam. He was just the closest relative. There's a halach of Goyal. Who is the one that's the one? Okay, let's not go there, but I just want to make this point. There is something very unique about an aunt. Number one, in general, the aunt, when it stands in contrast to a niece, is very disturbing. Why is it that when it comes to a niece, do Chazal say not only is it permitted for a man to marry his niece, there is a mitzvah? there's a mitzvah to marry a niece. And we don't do that today. Obviously, today we don't do that for many, many reasons. But the Chazal say it's a mitzvah. Yet the same exact relationship in the reverse, where a man, where it's the man who wants to marry his aunt, it is categorically forbidden. It is an erva. And there is no heter. There is no permission. There is no hechatimsa in the Torah when it's mutter to marry an aunt.
It's only the mother's.
Both the mother, it's forbidden to marry the mother's sister, and it's forbidden to marry achos aim, and it's forbidden to marry the father's sister. It is an erva, it is an isur kares, period. So how could it then be that when it comes to going in that direction, it's an erva kares, and when it comes to going in the reverse direction, going marrying your niece, which is really the same thing, the woman who's being married, who is she really marrying? She's marrying her father's brother. So it's really, from the woman's perspective, it is an uncle. When the man looks at, who am I marrying? If I'm marrying my father's brother, my father's sister, my mother's sister, oh, it's an erva. But when the woman makes that same exact perspective, puts herself in those shoes, I'm now going to marry my father's brother or my mother's brother, it is a mitzvah. Hayitachin, where do you have in the Torah something like this? So that itself is something which is very curious. Number two, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Goyel, Torah's Moshe, the one who went to Shemayim to bring down the Torah, is a product of a man marrying his aunt. Okay? Amra married Doido Soy. Vayikach, what was the pasuk say? Loli Isha. So isn't there something to that? And then the pasuk goes on to say, by the way, don't make no mistake about it, it was his aunt. So you see, there's something very, very special. Now we have to uncover what is it that is special, if we'll figure this out. But here, when we talk about Chorban, there are a lot of examples like this. A lot of examples. When we talk about Chorban, there are parallels to how it all began. Let me give you the most classic example. Where did Avraham Avinu come from? Where was he born? Where did he start out? Bavel, Aram Naharayim. What is Aram? It's today on the map. Go look at a map of Iraq. There's a place they pretty much know the region where it is. Aram Naharayim. That's where it all started. Vayoyimer Hashem el Avraham. Lech lecha, me artzicha, me moiladzicha, me beisavicha, ela oretz hashareka. And when Klal Yisrael sinned and were exiled, where did they go? Back to the same place. Right back to Aram Naharayim. The Chorban parallels the Geula. Hashem wants to elevate you. He took us from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael, gave us everything. You want to do Averos? You want to rebel against me? Go back where you came from. You came from Bavel? Go back to Bavel. Go back and sit in the same location where your ancestor, Avraham Avinu, where he came from.
And start over.
Here it's the same thing. Here we're discussing the last 10 people, the bones. The bones of the Mivashu Asara Nasha Babai Sechar Vamesu. There are 10 people left over. That's all that's left over for the whole Klal Yisrael. And who's going to go and take these bones away, carry them away? The uncle, the dodo, the uncle. Why the uncle? Well, it's an uncle, it's not an aunt, but it's the same type of relationship. We have to delve into this more. And that's because you all, Klal Yisrael, you began, you were a product of a marriage, of a nephew and an aunt, and now when there's going to be a description of the ultimate Chorban, where there are going to be no survivors, and who's going to carry away the bones, it's going to be that same type of individual. It's going to be the dod. It's going to be the uncle. The uncle is going to be the one that's going to collect the bones and bury them. Okay, we have to see this much more inside, but let's read the pasuk now. Okay, just keep that thought in mind. The brother of the father, umisarfai, the brother of the mother, a very unusual word. We'll see the mitzvahs again in a moment, and then there's another interpretation. If we're going to interchange the samach for a sin, loitzi atzamim, they will come to carry away the bones of these 10 people who have died, Ben Abayis, V'yomar la'asher b'yarkas Abayis, and the person, the uncle who carries away the bones, will look at the corner of the Abayis and will ask, Ha'oid imoch, is there anyone else, any other survivors here? V'yomar ofes, zero. Zero, there's no one left. V'yomar hos, and this individual, the Dode, will say, Hus, quiet. Don't complain. Don't have any complaint against the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ki lo lahazkir b'shem Hashem, which we learned yesterday, we have to read the Mitzvot inside now. Do not complain against Hashem. B'matztik aleichem es hadin. Accept upon yourself the divine judgment. Okay, let's see the Mitzvot in these two Pesukim, Pasuk Tes, Mitzvot David, Pasuk Tes, which begins on page 338 on the bottom. If you'd like, there's a sefer over here. On 338, Shalom Aleichem, what's your name?
Tzvi Horowitz.
Horowitz, nice to meet you.
Shui Horowitz. This is Paul.
Pasuk Tes. Im Yivosru, Ki Yachbiu, 338. Ki Yachbiu Atzmam Sham B'nei Ho'ayev. If there'll be any survivors, why would there be a survivor hiding in the house? They're trying to hide. Vamesu ki oyev yisroif habotim v'yamusu kulam v'lo yisroecha. They're going to incinerate the whole Eretz. Yisroel going to be no survivors. Pasuk yud unisao es kol echad yisu doidoi u'a. So here it says over here. Oh wait, I didn't translate it correctly. Unisao dodo. It's much better. Okay, it's each person will carry away their uncle. Each person will carry their uncle, Eskol Echod Yisu Dodo Umisarfoi, their uncle from their father, and their uncle from their mother. Umisarfoi means of the mother. Look at the Mitsudos Tzion. Umisarfoi. You never saw this word before, right? I'm willing to bet. I never heard it. Hu Achi Ho'aim. Each person will come and take away their father's brother and their mother's brother. Lohitzi Ho'atzame Min Habayis. To take the bones out of the bayis, lebal yisarfu gamhem imabasar, that the bone should not burn with the basar. Now, what does that mean exactly? It means the basar you're going to let burn? Very strange mitzudos. The mitzudos is picking up on the word atzamim, which means the meat, the flesh, let it burn. But the bones, don't let the bones burn. So take the bones. What, you're going to flay the person? What are you going to do? You're going to pull off all the flesh? I don't know. Do not let the bones burn with the basar, the omar. And the one that carries away the dead bodies, the bones, he's going to communicate with another person in this who is also searching for more bones. They're searching for bones. Are there any more bones? The Omar offers. Ritzoin Eloimar, Vizay Yoshiv. He's complaining. There's nothing left. It's too late. We came too late. The bones have already been burnt. There's nothing left. And then the other fellow says to his friend, quiet. Don't complain against Hashem. Ki elu hanisrafim lo avu lehazkir b'shem Hashem. Okay, I told you yesterday, different shot here. He's saying over here, they deserved it. Pretty scary stuff, huh? Okay, today you can never, ever, ever say such a thing like that. You can never say the reason why a person was incinerated was because he got what he deserved. You try that, you're finished, okay? No one today can dare say why the Holocaust happened. It's an outrageous arrogance for anyone to have any havamina, they can understand why 6 million people were killed. Many of them, the first tikkuf of the Holocaust, they were shot. Okay, they were shot in with bullets. Okay, they were shot mass execution. That was the method. And then the Nazis realized it would be impossible to kill all the Jews by shooting them. They just don't have enough bullets. Shoot them, it takes too long. So they came up, they devised the gas chambers. That was later. The gas chambers was pretty much it was later in the Holocaust. What?
42.
It's pretty late. Okay.
42-38. They started killing the disabled and old people. They actually used gas chambers.
Okay. But they didn't. They did not do it. They did not organize the gas chambers until much later on. Expanded until that was. It was interesting. It was much later. It's a real, like, you know. It's very frightening because the later in the Holocaust, the more the world knew. Maybe you'll go make up some lame excuse. Then 30, 30, 39, 40, 41. Oh, the world didn't know. Oh, we didn't know. We don't know what's going on. It's a lame excuse. It's total sheker. But by 42, 42, 43, the world knew what was going on.
25% of the killings.
What?
They just did a statistic.
25% of the killing Jews was 42, 43. 42, 43. 25%. So it's disproportionate. And the later on, things could have been done. Things really could. It's not like when they first, it was too late. They found, they knew that the killings took place mainly later in the game, later in the event, and the things could have been done. And the very end was horrific. Hungary, I mean, there's no excuse for that altogether. That was bamish, the very, very end. That was the very end, and nothing could have been done. That's what's so tragic. What's so tragic is that the acceleration of what they did towards the end was horrific. And at that point in time, that's exactly, by that point, certainly things could have been done. Let's go further.
Can I point out the
Ebenezer on
the second line?
Okay. Omar ki doidoi achi umasarfoi achi imoi v'zoi svara b'li ro'oya. He doesn't like what...
There's no
source
basis
for this. This is out of thin air.
The
Omar ki perushoi hamatziloi soy me'atshrefa yachlif samach b'sinke. Then he's going on to the interpretation. It means to burn. Okay, we'll come to that later on. Okay. But Ibn Ezra is not very pleased with the parish of the Mitzudos. He's not quoting the Mitzutzav. He came a lot before, a few hundred years before the Mitzudos. We'll see Drashi. But he does not appreciate this idea of Umis Sarfai can mean the brother of the mother. There is no such word in Tanakh. Where did you invent such a word? Obviously from the context. That's a common device that Rashi says that the Perusha is Muvan Mitoich in Yonoi. The perush is understood from its context. That's fair game. That's a whole discussion of how do you derive words. Okay, going further in the Mitzvah David says, he says why they deserve what they got. Why do they deserve it? They mentioned Avodah Zarah. According to the Mitzvah, this is shocking, utterly shocking what he says, the Pshat and the Pasuk is, this fellow that is collecting the bones to bury and to prevent them from being burnt, when he discovers there are no more bones to bury because all the bones have been burnt, he says, good, they got what they deserved. They got what they deserved because they were Oivdei Avodah Zarah. And therefore, the Kiloi Lahazkir B'Shem Hashem. It's a very dangerous pasuk to equate what it says here with our time. Our time, no one can ever come and say such a thing, and no one should take a license what it says here in this pasuk to think that we are the same.
However, Avodah Zarah, we are commanded to burn it out. Right?
Oh, so there is a poetic justice. There is a midah kineged midah, just like the Avodah Zarah is supposed to be destroyed, burnt. So to the people here are worshippers of the idols, their bones were burnt. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi, back on the previous page, page 336, Pasukhes. Hashem, very elaborate Pasuk, Hashem, he swears with all of the shemites, pull out every name in the hat, and every name you got. Hashem, lukim tzavaka, iskulu v'chulu, b'navshay, midas, dekavana. Rashi immediately is disturbed. What in the world does this mean? Hashem, he swears binafshoi with his neshama. Neshama, who? What does that mean? Hashem has a neshama? This is beyond Kabbalah to say that Hashem has a neshama. Hashem, Elokai, neshama shenasata bi. The neshama that you have given me. Where do you find that Hashem has a neshama? So what is the beauty of neshama? So Rashi says, do not take this word literally. Do not take the word literally. And in fact, look at the Targum. The Targum says, Kayem Hashem Lokem B'meim Ray, Hashem has fulfilled with his words. The Targum goes to an extreme, does not even want to say Navshe means will, intent. It means his command, his Amira. Yeah? I guess so, yeah, benafsha. But when we have in Chumash, benafsha, nishba Hashem, we have a few psukim in Tanakh where Hashem swears. Rarely, if at ever, does it say that Hashem swears benafshoi. Targum is right away spooked out, you can see, and he says, ki kayem, which means to swear, Hashem elokim, b'meim rei. B'meim rei means with his statement. How, and then he goes, how does that differ in the word nu'um? Nu'um is omar. So there are two words. There's benafshoi, and there's the word nu'um. Two words which, I don't know what the difference is, two words which mean the same thing, because the Targum obviously does not even want to go near attempting to translate the word benafshoi as Hashem's neshama that is beyond possibility of our understanding. Rashi is not so afraid, but Rashi still does not go to the extreme, and Rashi says benafshoi means nothing more than midas v'kavana. Hashem has clear intent. Hashem's knowledge, Hashem's intent is nu'um Hashem for misso'ev, kumo mita'ev. It means disgust. I detest. Unlike the mitsudois that translated the word I love. Look at what it's over here on the sipsis. Okay, mita'ev, kumo mita'ev. Al ki ha'alef v'ha'ayin motza'on echad yischalfu le'eze. So what is the problem with the word to'ev, meaning to detest? It deserves an ayin, not an aleph. So therefore that aleph is out of place, and therefore he says, no big deal, we can interchange the aleph and the ayin, and thus it means to detest. Hashem over here is saying, I detest, in contrast to, asher ohev eske'oin Yaakov selah, what we say in Tehillim, right before the blowing of the shofar, that Hashem, he loves the Go'on Yaakov, here because of our Averos, Hashem, he detests the Go'on Yaakov, al tikri with an aleph, rather with an ayin. Okay, v'chein tikrim yoneson, minabel, Targum translates the word mita'ev to mean minabel lashon of nibul, it means disgusting. Ano yospes makdisha, revuso di Yaakov, the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is the revuso, is the greatness. The Targum adds in a word. He adds in a word over here, and he says that the Go'on Yaakov is the Beis HaMikdash. He does not say that in the Pasuk. The Beis Mikdashah, which is the Revuse. Revuse means the greatness. The greatness here is a translation of the word Go'on. Okay, and then what does it mean over here? The word the Ar Minoisav. So that's the next words of the Targum. Uvi Ron Yosei. It means the palaces. What are the palaces in this context? It might mean the Malchus. Maybe it refers to the palace of the king, the Malchus of Klal Yisrael is misbehaving in the Gavod Zara, or maybe it means the Bate Midrashois, the Bate Kinesiois, the other holy institutions of Klal Yisrael. But the Go'on Yaakov refers to the Beis HaMikdash. If not for the Targum, we would assume the Go'on Yaakov means the Jewish people themselves. And then when it says the Ar Minoisav, that refers to the Beis HaMikdash. And indeed, that's how the Mitsudos David learns. The Mitsudos David learns the Go'on refers, go back to the Mitsudos David on the other page, look at the word Go'on. No, I take it back, I made a mistake. He says it means the Beis HaMikdash also. Go'on ki ken yikor the Beis HaMikdash. V'chein v'tzvi edyoi l'go'on someh. So he means, but in the Mitzvah David, he says, he seemed to indicate that, alright, so we'll leave with that. They both so far, we'll see other Mepharshim. Okay, not everyone learns like this, but so far both Rashi and the Mitzudos are of agreement that the Go'on in this context means the Beis HaMikdash, and thus, when it says the Armin Oisav, the palaces, we have no choice but to shift that to either a palace of the king, of the diplomats, or the Bate Midrashois and Bate Kinosios. Okay, further in Rashi.
There's a phrase, I forget, which was the Hadar Go'on.
So in Echlam, the word it depends on the context. It depends on the context what the word go'oin means. Go to a wedding. What does it mean a go'oin? When you go to a wedding, what we said, al tikri those who came late, al tikri go'oin elagun. You came late, right? It's a joke, or a kefir joke. Okay, further.
It's not a joke.
It's not a joke? Okay, I was once at a wedding, and a guy that I know, you know, he's a Rebbe, he's a shtickle Rosh Hashiva, and they called him up Harav Hagoin for a bracha. Harav Hagoin. So he got his bracha, and he came and he said to me, you hear what they called me? And he's laughing. They called him Harav Hagoin. What a crazy joke. So I said to him, all right, maybe not, I'm not going to argue with you about Torah, but one thing I have to tell you, I know you, you are a goin in chesed. You're a goin in chesed. And he liked that. Because he is. What he does, the chesed that he does, I could never even come near what he does, the things that he does.
And you heard this yesterday in
what?
Buddha Chassid. If someone says something wrong, then you say, I did it, I acknowledge.
Yeah.
So they called him a Rav Hagoin, so he said he didn't want to. Okay,
they called me a Rav Hagoin. They didn't call me a Rav Hagoin. They called me a Rav Hagoin. Okay, so when they call a person a Rav Hagoin, there are definitely people in this generation that you can say about them that they're a goin in chesed. Okay, I don't know if you can say about people in this generation they're a goin in Torah, few and far in between in goin in Torah, but a goin in chesed, there are people out there.
You can strive for that. Is that a Rosh Yeshiva?
You know, some of the Rosh Yeshivas, what do? The whole day they do chesed. Okay, they don't have time to learn anymore. They don't. A lot of Rosh Yeshivas, that's it. They're done. They're finished. The whole day they're oisik in mamish chesed. Yeah.
Davish
lehagun.
Birchas Kahanim, it says that, you know, if a Talmud Chacham, a lady, has a right to say, I don't want to wash it, I'm already
saying. Oh, the whole discussion.
So they come to the conclusion that today no one can say he's a Talmud Chacham.
Yesh, it depends. It depends on the. It depends with regard to certain things. There are things that no one today can call a Talmud Chacham, but there are other things which. Ein lcha ela mashu b'doyrei. Yiftach b'doyrei. What is it? Yiftach and Shmuel. Say the pasuk. Geshmuel b'doyrei. Yiftach appears from the Chazal. They were not impressed with Yiftach. Okay, I don't know what that means. I don't know. We don't know who Yiftach really was. But Chazal were not very impressed. But yet Chazal said, "Listen, he is the leader, the shofet." Yiftach b'doyrei kishmuel b'doyrei. So yesh v'yesh. In certain areas, there has to be a leader. There has to be authority. There has to be respect. In other areas, you got to know who you are. Okay. Today we live in a different time. Let's go further. Bashoye b'yamohim. Kam tov yalisa lamokoyim el ha'koyin. Ashoye b'yamim ha'him. Ein lecha l'mashe b'yamecha. Further in the Rashi. Rashi over here says, the Mikdash is called Goin Uzam, the Goin, the pride of their strength. Shenemar, it says in regard to the Churban Hini, Mechaldas Mikdashi, Goin Uzchem, I'm going to destroy, profane my holy place, the Goin Uzchem. Ir Moloya, Yerushalayim, Yoshvecha, the ear refers here specifically to Yerushalayim, Yoshvecha, the inhabitants. Okay, next Rashi, page 338. If there will be left, there will be survivors. From the plague and from the sword, the enemy will burn the city, the bayis, when they capture the city. Unfortunately, this happened in history over and over again. In fact, the first, I read about this a while ago, very, very frightening, the first city that the Nazis conquered, I forgot all the details, but the very first shtetl that the Nazis came in, it's exactly what they did. They gathered all of the Jews, they forced them into the shul, and they basically burnt the shul with the people inside alive. That was what they did, and this happened by the Crusades, when the Crusaders finally reached Yerushalayim. Okay? When they finally reached Yerushalayim, what did they do? They collected all of the Jews, they put them into the Beis HaKnesses, whatever they had, a central Beis HaKnesses in Yerushalayim, and they burnt the shul with the Jews inside alive. Okay? So this is something which has happened in history again and again. Collecting Jews, putting them into the bayis, into the Beis HaMedrash, burning them alive, And Rachmana Litzlan, this was predicted over here. Rashi over here is telling us, Rashi is telling us over here, sheyishrifu ho'ivim es habayis aleihem, that the enemy will burn the bayis aleihem upon the living, upon the people. The lochta mesuim, when they conquer the city, the Jews are collected into the bayis, and the bayis is set afire.
What does bayis mean?
A bayis either can mean literally a home, a private home.
I'm saying it doesn't necessarily
mean a structure, a shul. You're right. It does not mean, it can mean a house. But, okay.
What is the message of Hashem when terrible? I mean, it does happen. When didn't
We don't know.
It's terrible.
We don't know. We have no idea. Who can
answer? Dying in a shul, which was done many times. What is that terrible?
Maybe it's Al Kiddush Hashem. Maybe that's an element of that. Maybe Hashem is having Rachmanis. Maybe that if anyway the person is a gzer shma, a gzer that a person has to die in Misa like this, it should be in the Machom Kodesh, in a holy place. And when it's in the holy place, it's a given that it's Al Kiddush Hashem. If a Jew dies in a shul, isn't that the ultimate? He died Al Kiddush Hashem. You know, there's a discussion that if a person is killed, so is every single death, every single murder of a Jew automatically called that a Jew died Al Kiddush Hashem? Now, that's a very nasty thing that I just said. Okay, because of course, a Jew, anyone who dies because they are a Jew, he died Al Kiddush Hashem. Daniel Pearl, remember that ten years ago? So he was not religious, a kihuzet. At the very, very end, he said, I'm a Jew. There were certain things, I don't remember all the details.
Yes.
And he was killed. He was killed. Now, did the reporters, what would have been if he was not Jewish? Would those terrorists, would they have killed him anyway? He was a reporter. We don't know all the details. But I just point out, there are situations where people die, are killed. And from the circumstances, you can argue, and maybe it's actually true, it's not necessarily because they're Jewish. It's just because you're on the wrong team. You're on the wrong side. We are terrorists, and we're coming to kill anyone who represents Western civilization. Okay? We don't really know about Torah and Mitzvahs and Yerushalayim. A Jew, as far as some of these terrorists are concerned, nothing more than just a representative of America. You're a representative of American culture, of Western civilization. Therefore, we're going to kill you to show America. Oh, you're Jewish also? Icing on the cake. Does that qualify in halacha that he died al kiddush Hashem? Okay, the answer is yes. Okay, the long and short is yes. But there's quite a bit of discussion of what qualifies for this lofty concept of people dying al kiddush Hashem. If a person dies in a shul, in a Beis HaKnesses, Beis HaMedrash, there is no discussion. There is no discussion. Why are you putting him in a shul and not putting him in, killing him out in the street? So, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way is saying, if Rachmana Litzlan, there's going to be a gzera, and this is going to happen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he brings it about, and the person is going to be brought to the shul, this is a gilui to the world that Jews have died in honor of Hashem, Al Kiddush Hashem. And the reward and the impact that it has upon the world is infinitely greater. Okay, so you have to take that into consideration. Let's go further. Okay, next in Pasagud, Vinos O, Unis O, Dodo, Umis Sarfai. Kiroivai, Vi Oihavai. Hamatsiles, Watsamois, Minasrefa, Kain Tirgim Yonison. Viyit Line, Korive, Mi Kedo. Now notice here, okay, first he says over here so far, he's very, very vague, and he's saying all it means is a relative. A doidoi does not necessarily mean an uncle. He didn't say that yet. All he says is a relative and a beloved friend. He will come and he will collect the bones, and he will save him from the yitline karive. He will save his relative from nikeda, from being burnt. Now, it does not say anywhere in the pasuk the word burning. Okay, you see the word burning here? It doesn't say the word burning. It says, Unisa'o dodo umisarfai. Allah Haitzi atson. What?
That's according to the interpretation that the sarfo is burning.
No, I don't even think you need to come on to that. I think from the context, it's understood that there's a burning coming on. Even if you are to say The word umis sarfoy means a beloved person. It seems from Rashi so far. We have to give Rashi goes further. He gives them the whole interpretation. But if you just read what we learned so far in the Rashi, you get the impression that the word umis sarfoy means a beloved friend. Dodo means a relative, a blood relative. Umis sarfoy means you're not my blood relative, but you're my beloved friend. And from the context of the pasuk, that you're coming to save bones. Why are you coming to save bones? So it seems that it's self-understood, not everything has to be written into the pasuk, that there's a sreifa, there's a fire, and the relative is coming to preserve the bones from the sreifa. Then Rashi gets a little bit more specific. V'yesh liftar umis sarfoy, ha'oisek bikvu rasoy uve evloy, a person that's busy in burying a friend, uve evloy, uve misrefois, and in burning, shesarfin alehem, that they do in their honor. Let's read a few more words. Kumo uve misrefois oy avoisecha, referring to the kings. Okay, it was a tradition that we really don't really understand what this is all about, but when a king died, they would burn, there was a ceremony of burning the private possessions of the king. Because no one is fit to benefit from his possessions. It was a sign of honor.
That's why they killed the wife too.
No one should live with his wife. In fact, it's halacha, a king, a Jewish king, you're not allowed to naguna. And naguna, shimamish, cannot marry anyone after the king dies. So there was a ceremony, and it's a ceremony of honor, to take his private possessions and to burn them publicly.
Funeral pyre.
That's what it was called? A funeral pyre? That's such a term? Pyre. Such a term, a funeral pyre? Never heard that before. Amazing. A funeral pyre, specialty. It's a ceremony. So Yechezkel there, I don't remember what it says, but over there, one of the pesukim is talking about one of the kings, and the Navi gives comfort to the king. Don't worry, you're gonna live. The korban will not happen in your lifetime. You'll live a good life. You'll die. You'll have a beautiful funeral, and they'll have for you the funeral pyre, and they'll do all of the ceremonies of honor. The korban will come in a later point in time. So you see from that pasuk that since the Navi said that you're going to have this honor, the burning of your fathers, meaning they're going to do this ceremony, they're going to burn your private possessions, that it was considered to be an act of distinction. Here as well, he's saying an incredible chiddush, not like what it said in we learned yesterday. Umis sarfo indeed means sereifa. We're going to interchange the samach for a sin. And what it means is the person that busies himself with the honor of the dead. And one of the things of honor of the dead, especially for a very distinguished person, is to burn his private possessions out of honor to show that no one in this world is roy, is fit to make use of his possessions. Like you have different people from the past. Would anyone sit in their chair? Like in the Belza shul in Eretz Yisrael, they have in a glass case the chair and shtender of the previous Belzer Rebbe, the one who survived the war, of Aaron Mibels. Okay, I would think the reason why he wouldn't sit in the chair is because if someone was in the chair, it would collapse in a second. it's so schwach, what? What happened in 770?
The chair's
on a platform. Right, on a platform. Okay, you go, also they have in the Letterman Shul. If you ever go to the Rav Chaim Shlita, in the Letterman Shul, the chair and shtender of the stipler of Rav Chaim's father, Zeichas Zeich Levracha, is now cordoned off. They have it like a barricade. It was till recently they didn't do it. Recently it was just there. You can see that it was thick dust. I was there a couple of years ago. You can manage to see the thick dust. They didn't do that. For some reason, they didn't want to dust it. On his chair and stender. I heard that someone stole it. I'm not joking. I don't know. And then they found it. I don't know whether they recovered it. And now it's like protected. They have a camera watching it. It became like, you know, an icon. Okay, and it's interesting. This chair and shtender, the famous picture of the stipler, a very classic picture of the stipler. He's sitting at that chair and shtender. And you go to the Letterman Shul, you see it's right there. You see the chair and shtender. But in any event, no one is roy to sit in that chair or to touch that shtender. So in ancient times, they would burn it. Today we don't burn it. We sell it on eBay. Sotheby's. Okay? It's a collector's item today. Sotheby's comes from the word Umisarfai, right? Umisarfai. It's the same gematria as Sotheby's. It sounds similar, right? Umisarfai. So Umisarfai means the people that engaged in the honor of the dead, specifically things the honor, the ultimate honor of burning their prized possessions. Then he goes on to say, the Omer Hamoitzi Min Asreifa, we go further in this Rashi, the one that's Moitzi Min Asreifa, Lasher B'Yarkos HaBayis L'Chaveiroi, the one that is involved in this search for bones, he says to anyone that's in the Bayis, Shehalach Livdoik B'Soich HaBayis, the person also assisted him, who is assistant, who went into the Bayis to look for bones, Ha'oid Imach Adam Chai Zuloscha, Shenimlat Min HaMacha Bo'im, that are alive from those that are in hiding. Now notice, Rashi is not like the Mitzudos. The Mitzudos says, he says to the person, are there any more bones? Rashi says, the question is not, are there any more bones? But the question, are there any more living? Are there any more survivors? Are there any more survivors? Ha'imach adam chai, survivors. Zulascha shenimlat min hamach bo'im. The Amar office. Ein chai ela meisim. Everyone is dead. There are no survivors. The Omar Zeilov, so the one who asked the question says to that person, Hos, es hapigorm nupshat. Doesn't mean silence. Don't challenge Hashem. Don't question his ways. But it means, Hos means the dead bodies, I guess it means to remove them.
Like Hoser.
Hoser, to remove them. Next Rashi explains more. The Omar Hos, Hashlech, visalek hakol. Remove the dead bodies. Kizos lohem al. This came to them. Allah Sherloy Rotsula Haskir B'Shem Hashem came to Yiminasan. That he agrees with Parish of the Mitzudos. And that is, remove the dead bodies and bury them. And they deserve what they got because they did not serve Hashem. They had their chance. The Navi warned them. They did not listen. And therefore, we have to be matstik the din, what Hashem has done. So he comes out from this Rashi. We've already come across by contrasting Rashi, the Targum, and the Mitzudos. We've already taken away so many perushim in all of these words. In the words, what does it mean, a misarfai? Does it mean a mother's brother? Does the word a misarfai mean a person who engages in giving honor to the dead, even to the degree of burning their prized possessions? Does the word a misarfai mean just general? Does it mean that's a hard parish to say that it means. The Mitsudo says, in the second interpretation, it means kumo umis sarfai. See, the Mitsudo sioin, he says a parish which is very hard to fit into the pasuk. It means to burn, but it does not mean to burn his prized possessions. It means, look at the Mitsudo sioin, umis sarfai. First he says, who kumo umis sarfai besin. And then he goes, Uritzon Eloimar, Ohavo, your friend, the beloved friend, Hamatzil Atzmoisov Min Hasreifa. We're calling the friend Umisarfo because the word Umisarfo is related to the word Sreifa. And the way the word here is being used is a friend who loves you so much, he tries to save your bones from being burnt. Or maybe tries to risk his life to save you from dying in a sreifa.
From
being burnt. Dodo umisarfo, your beloved relative and your beloved friend who is trying to save you from being burnt. What?
Doesn't necessarily have to be burnt. It could signify peril, danger.
Danger, okay, maybe. So we've really taken away three Perushim, and what's so interesting is that the Targum doesn't seem to translate it at all. Look at the Targum. It's very bizarre. Targum says, V'yit line korive. What does korive normally mean? A relative. Oh, that fits very nice with the word dodo. So what about the next word? Umisarfo. There's no word. He says, mi kedo. Oh, I take it back. So maybe it means that the Targum wants to say umisarfo means from being burnt. From being burnt. Okay, so it means, but it's a very, the way the word umisarfo from he's translating it from being burnt. That's not the letter. Is there a minchas shai here? Well, is there a minchas shai that it says it? Let's see on the page. It's not the grammatically way we would expect the way the nikud to be to appear on the page. Paranoid. It does not seem to fit. But okay, and that's how he appears to translate the word. So the Targum and the Mitsudos translate the word from being burnt, and Rashi translates it referring to either the mother, the brother of the mother, or a person who is engaging in the activity of giving honor to the dead, even to the degree of performing a ceremony where his private possessions will be burnt out of honor. Okay, the other interesting concept we learn over here, machlokes, is what it means, hos. Viamar hos. Does hos mean to remove the dead bodies, or does hos mean silence? Quiet. Don't complain, and the people deserve what they got. Okay, and the other, now there are many more issues which Rashi, the Ra, and the Targum have not touched upon. There are many more issues that we have to get to, and that, in Yiras Hashem, we have to leave for tomorrow.